Talking home improvement today on the Lee Rayburn Show. In this hour, we get inside your walls and look at the power that is coursing in between them and what you should need to know before you begin any projects when it comes to the electricity in your home. And anything you need to do or need an expert to do, and to know the difference between the two, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us to talk@wpr.org. Our expert electrician this hour is Adam Gullickson. He's the service manager at the Electrician Incorporated in Verona. And Adam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Lee. It's always a pleasure being on.
I appreciate you being here. And I want to start with some basics here. When should a homeowner call in a professional to do electrical work, in your opinion?
In my professional opinion, I think somebody, you know, there are lots of handymen and DIYers out there that are okay to, you know, do things here and there, replace switches, things like that. In my professional opinion, what I tell people is if you open something up and you get that feeling that says, oh no, I don't know what I've done, that's when you should always call your electrician, just to be on the safe side. You know, I'm people can gather their own information on this day and age on the internet, so they know enough to turn breakers off while they're working on things. But when you open it up and you just don't know what you're looking at, that's when you call us and we're happy to help.
So there is this, you know, I saw it on YouTube, so therefore I can do it now. And I wonder how much to trust YouTube and how you decide when it's an opportunity for you to try it yourself and not a good idea to go it alone.
Yes. It's all about what you're comfortable with. I don't want to encourage people to do their own electrical just because it is a dangerous, it is a dangerous job and career path and things like that. But if you do it safely, there are ways that you can do it. And if people are willing to give it their best effort and try, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion, but you got to do it safely.
So then let me ask you, how would you safely go about replacing something as simple as an electrical outlet?
You know, what I tell people is in the first thing you have to do with electricity is you have to make sure it's off. You know, everything in our company, we have a safety program. If we can avoid it, we are not doing, they call it live work, where things are energized. If at all costs, we turn power off because that's how you train better. That's how you you can think. You're not on a time crunch, things like that. If you're replacing an outlet, the first thing to do is to just turn the power off. Mm-hmm. And make sure it's turned off. You know, we have things called non-contact voltage testers, is what they are. You can get them at Home Depot. You know, they're $16 to $25, depending on what brand you get. But what it does is it allows you to see if there's energy or power at that outlet before you go sticking your hands in there. Just because you turn the breaker off means you can't assume that the power is off.
And some of those old breaker boxes, it's not entirely clear which is going where.
It is not. And so the labeling is not always right. So I always tell people to get a non-contact voltage tester. That just allows you to be safe, you know, and have the assurance that, yes, there is no energy here. I am okay to do this. And then at that point, you know, there's a couple of screws on an outlet on the metal part on the top and the bottom. It allows you to pull the outlet out. And then there are screws on the side. There are all sorts of different wiring, and this is where you're going to get yourself into trouble. Just because if it's newer wiring, the colors are clear on what the wire is. If it's older wiring, the color might not be on those wires anymore. And when you open it up and you see that, at that point, in your head, you should say, I don't know these colors. I need to call an electrician.
It's when you get to that point that you are unclear about what to do next that you should probably stop dead in your tracks for safety's sake.
You got it.
Because for every YouTube video that shows you how to be your own electrician, there's a YouTube video of somebody turning on a ceiling fan that they just installed and having it flying off the ceiling.
That's just it. And so it's all dependent on what shape your existing electrical system is. If you're in a newer home, you're still going to have all the color to your wires. Mm-hmm. At that point, you know, we always say black to brass, just a little rhyme to help you remember things. And then your ground wires, your green. green, and then your neutral wire is your silver. And then, you know, if you want to replace that outlet, if you just remember those three things, you should be good to go. Install your new one, put the screws back in, and then you turn your power back on once everything is installed. That's always the last thing you do.
Black to brass, ground is green, and neutral silver.
Yep.
That seems pretty simple, but what are some of the big mistakes that you see do-it-yourselfers making, Adam?
What we see a lot, you know, there, you know, when you're twisting a screw and you go righty-tighty, lefty-loosey, things like that, sometimes, you know, when we put little hooks on the end of our wires to hook them around that outlet screw, sometimes, you know, we want to have that wire go with the direction that you're tightening the screw, if you understand.
Yeah.
Because when you're tightening that down, if your hook is the other way, you can open that hook up and loosen the connection over time.
How common are these loose connections? And I go back to the idea of the ceiling fan and you know, tying those two cables together, putting it in the cap, and then calling it quits. How secure does that have to be?
I always tell people when you're tightening wire nuts, we do see a lot of loose wire nuts with people, you know, putting up their own ceiling fans, putting new USB outlets in. Those are hot.
Yes.
That's a big ticket item right now. What I always tell people is if you want to try it yourself, that wire nut, you want to have those wires twisted two to three times past the end of the wire nut, essentially. So you want to have those wires twisted up a little bit, even on the insulation part. And I think people are afraid that it's going to break off.
Even on the installation. See, that would be new to me, that you'd be even twisting the installation. I guess I hadn't even considered that. You mentioned these USB outlets now. And are those as easy to install as black to brass, ground green, and neutral silver?
Most of them are. You do get... An occasional different one. Somebody bought it somewhere. It's an older version, things like that. But most of them do come with a brass screw for the hot wire, a silver screw for the neutral, and then a green screw for the ground.
All right, that's easy enough.
Yeah.
Is it me or are we using more and more electricity in our home? And how does that change from a perspective of an electrician, if so?
It is sort of we are using more electricity, but we're also becoming more efficient. Huh. So in the terms of lights, in regards to lights, everything is being converted to LED right now, which LED is much more efficient than incandescence or fluorescence or things like that. You know, they don't get as hot, they stay cool, they run more efficient. But in regards to like electric vehicles and things like that, while we're becoming more efficient with our lighting efficiencies, we're also drawing more amperage on your home system with electric vehicles, induction cooktops. Those are big right now as well.
Moving away from gas stoves to electric stoves seems to be a trend right now, and that could... That could put some stress on the electrical system. And how do you accommodate for that?
What I tell people, you know, we're in the Dane County area. It seems to, you know, Dane County is a fairly old area. We have a lot of 100 amp panels in houses. If you're looking to add an EV charger or an induction cooktop, there are ways, you know, there are load management systems that allow you to not upgrade your from 100 to 200 amps. But unfortunately, it's sort of more of a Band-Aid than an actual solve. While the load management systems do work, it's always better to go from 100 amps to 200 amps to upgrade your house system just to support that bigger amperage load that you want to add.
So when it comes to EV owners considering a home charging system, should they consider an electrician?
They absolutely should. What I've noticed, just because, you know, I've been doing this about 12 years now. I spent about 9 years out in the field, 3 in the office. And so now I'm a service manager in the office. What I've noticed is a lot of people, car dealerships they're keen on selling people the EV, but they're not always 100% sure how to explain that to them, or how to say, hey, there's this going to be this extra charge. You might not be able to support this electric vehicle. And if you are thinking of an electric vehicle, I would always say call an electrician, contact one, email, whatever you got to do, just to make sure that your electrical service is up to snuff to support that extra load.
John in Fitchburg emailed to say he added a sub box to accommodate extra circuits, and in the process, the electricians relocated a number of circuits without properly identifying them. In this day and age, is there a way to identify what outlets, lights, and so forth a circuit serves without going around and flipping the switches and testing individual outlets throughout the house?
Unfortunately, we have not thought of an easier way to do that yet. So it, unfortunately, it still takes two people to label a panel, just because that's what we do. One person flips things on and the other person, what I normally tell people is we turn every light on in the house,
yes,
every single light, no matter what. And that way, when all the power is on, when you're flipping things off, you'll see the lights turn off.
Okay.
And it kind of gives you a zone of where to look instead of trying to figure out where in the entire house it is.
What are some of the most dangerous things you've seen as an electrician in a house?
I think the most dangerous thing I've seen it, you know, we got on what DIYers are, or, you know, what DIYers do. I think the most dangerous thing that I see are loose wire connections. We talked about that, and honestly, I can't stress that enough, because that loose wire connection creates heat, and heat is what creates fire. And so, you know, obviously you need air and spark and things like that, but heat is a big factor in home fires. And I can't stress those loose wire nut connections enough when people are doing their own work, you know. I don't want to put fear, you know, in everybody.
No, maybe you do, Adam. Maybe that's not such a bad idea, because every now and again in the news, you see the story of an electrical fire. You wonder how that possibly could have happened. And from your experience, the main culprit in all of this is loose wires. So if your wires aren't tight enough, if you're not wrapping around all the way into the insulation of these wires, mm-hmm, you perhaps are leaving yourself vulnerable to one of those news stories.
You are. And so it's just, you know, those loose wire nut connections, mm-hmm, loose wires in a panel as well, that can be the cause. You know, as panels age and have had heat and cold and heat and cold and things like that, if you're buying a new home, it would be wise to just call an electrician. You know, I know we have home inspectors,
right,
and they do a very good job of looking over the entire home, but it's hard for somebody to be an expert in everything.
So you've worked alongside home inspectors, right? That's part of your
absolutely
experience. So what is it that the home inspector might miss that an electrician can hone in on?
You know, home inspectors are very good. You know, we electricians, we do assessments. You know, I don't want to get them mixed up. Electricians
right
can do home assessments, and electrical inspectors do inspections. You know, some of the just the minute details, you know, they're very good at knowing, you know, a 20 amp circuit gets 12 gauge wire, things like that. But where the wire goes and how things are wired behind switches, they're not taking, you know, some people might take the time to open those switches, but a lot of home inspectors are just getting on the details, GFCI protection next to a wet location, things like that.
What do you mean when you say GFCI protection? What is that? And it seems to be pretty much the standard at this point, right?
It is, yes. So GFCI is a ground fault circuit interrupter. It protects equipment, you know, people. So, you know, if your hand is wet and you go to pull the plug on that GFCI, if it detects, you know, that water, that connection between, you know, two different phases,
yeah,
it's going to trip right away just to save you, you know. You know, home inspectors pick up on those pretty easily, just because they're well-known codes that you need to have. But how things are wired behind your walls and what kind of wire you have sometimes it's not always known. You know, they can see in the attic what you have, but what's in the actual stud cavities can sometimes be unknown.
Adam Gullickson, our guest, 12 years experience as an electrician with the Electrician Incorporated in Verona. And if you have questions for him about your home and the electricity running through it, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. And we'll go to Mike in Madison next. Mike, hi.
Hi, Lee, I'm hoping to hear you for the next 50 years.
Thank you so much, you and me both.
Yeah, Miss Larry, already, but glad to have you aboard. So I want to start by saying the two, I just learned this the hard way on my kitchen remodel. I had my whole house redone electrically, and a 200-amp service that I upgraded to is not enough if you want to have electric cars and electric appliances. For example, electric water heater, an electric furnace, electric dryer, dishwasher, and the list goes on and on, not to mention electric cars. So just for your audience, if you have a 100-amp service like I did and you're going to upgrade, go right to the 300-plus if you're planning on having all electric stuff, because the 200 will not be enough. And with the GFIC stuff, it takes 5 or 6 circuits now just to run a kitchen, not to mention your other utility rooms. So anyway, this is an FYI, as I learned the very hard way. There's a lot, if you're going to go with electric appliances and get away from gas, double your service right off the bat, because everything is going electric nowadays, and you're going to draw way more than you ever expected.
Mike, I learned a lot from that call, so thank you very much. And Adam, let's get your reaction. If you're considering bumping up from 100 and considering using less natural gas in your home, would it be best just to go straight to the 300?
It would be. You know, if you know you have remodels planned, you know, it's always good to get that 100 out of your house regardless. You know, whether you do 200 or 300 is entirely up to you. There is a cost difference, obviously. But if you know you have remodels planned and you want to get rid of your gas water heater and your gas range and your gas vehicle, you're going to convert everything to electric, it would be very wise to go to that 300 right away, just to support all the extra amperage that you're going to have to draw.
Is that going to be an extra cost from the 200 amp?
Yes, just because there are a couple of ways you can do it, you know, but the biggest thing is the meter socket or pedestal outside. That has to be big enough to support that amperage difference.
And about the GFCI circuits, I recognize what Mike is saying. They are all through my kitchen. They are all through my bathroom. They seem to be just about everywhere.
They are, and it's just becoming more popular just because it's a good way to protect people.
It's a safety feature.
It is. It's a safety feature.
But is it also a cost consideration?
It can be. Just been how things are ran. You know, if you can either GFCI protect something with an outlet, or you can GFCI protect something with a breaker and do the entire circuit instead of just that outlet.
So do you need more circuits then for your kitchen and bathroom as a result?
Not as a result of GFCI protection, more what the kitchen remodel is. A lot of pieces of equipment from the manufacturer are requiring dedicated circuits with GFCI protection.
And is that doesn't seem to be a safety feature then. What's the reason behind that?
I think the manufacturer just wants to, I'm just speculating on this one. They just want to make sure things are as safe as possible from a liability standpoint.
Thank you for the call, Mike. And we'll go to Kathy in Cambridge next. Kathy, hello.
Hi. So I'm concerned because a year ago, my brother-in-law fixed my dimmer switch. So I over the kitchen, it's that circular light that you turn it on and dim can go to dim to bright. And anyway, the whole thing quit working like a week ago. So I don't even have any light now. Now, I'm scared of electrics, but from what you're saying, if I could undo the bolt, and if I can look in there, I'm thinking maybe he didn't put those two wires together tight enough, like you said, twist them enough before you put the cap on. If I could see it, I really don't want to touch it. I'm scared of electricity, and I think people should be scared. I've seen my ex-husband try to fix himself, and his whole body jiggled when the electricity was on when he tried something.
Ooh, Kathy.
I laughed my ass off. Yeah.
So the dome light just seems to have gone dead. And before Kathy considers replacing it on her own, what do you think? What would your recommendation be here, Adam?
You know, if you're scared of electricity in this case, I would recommend calling an electrician in this one.
Sure.
Just because you're already getting that feeling that we talked about earlier, where I just don't know if I can do it. err on the side of caution.
Yeah.
So always err on the side of caution.
Kathy's already at that point where this is the red flag that says time to bring in a pro.
Yeah. And you know, it's something like a dimmer. It would most likely just be a 1 hour service call from wherever you are. You know, if you hire somebody out of Cambridge, or, you know, you can even call us, the Electrician Inc. But it's a very simple issue. It's not going to be a very costly fix.
Which brings us to George, who in Janesville called but couldn't stay it with us. How do we find an electrician we can trust? What's the best way to go about finding an electrician that'll do what we want for a cost we can afford?
You know, that's a tough question, honestly, Lee. I try to live, you know, when I talk to people out in public, I try to give them advice as a person instead of a company. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We try to build the relationship instead and try and make them feel like they are part of, you know, we do care about them, which we do. You should care about the family whose home you're working in as an electrician. And I think the biggest thing is to just build that relationship. And if your gut tells you this person is taking care of me, is doing the right thing, that would be a person or an electrician that you can trust. But if you like that feeling that you get, you know, when you open up a switch and you don't know what you're looking at, if something feels off, you know, you can get multiple bids from different electricians. You know, you're a homeowner, you can get 7, 8, 9, 10 bids if you want.
Shop around.
Yeah. Just to see, if you don't think that you're going to be, taken care of correctly, you can see what other people have to offer.
So to use another home improvement example that's not electricity, we live in this age of experts where, you know, we have to trust people, and we use the toilet every day, but we seldom consider how complicated and, complex a toilet structure is until it becomes time to try to fix it. And then you're like, you're in way over your head in an awful, awful way. So you have to, and you know, whether it's car repair, whether it's home repair, in this age of expertise, we need to find somebody we can trust. And sometimes the biggest hurdle to overcome is finding that trust factor. And I've found, asking friends and family, looking for referrals from people that you trust are the best ways to go about finding somebody that I can trust with their expertise in ways that I would find myself in way over my head and in potentially a dangerous way.
Absolutely. I would agree completely.
Adam, I appreciate that perspective. I've got about a minute here, but David in New Richmond called just wanting to recommend that outdoor GFCI outlets should have plastic covers installed. Otherwise, any amount of moisture will trip them and turn them off. And I believe I've seen that as well. And that would just be, what about electrical outlets outdoors, Adam?
Absolutely. We as electricians, we call them bubble covers, but the actual term for them is an in-use cover. What it allows you to do is have something plugged in and still covered at the same time to keep water out. Very handy. You know, the old covers where it was just a flip cover with a gasket, those are only wet location rated if the cover is closed. And everybody always, you and I both know, everybody always leaves outside stuff plugged in all the time. So obviously they're not wet location rated when things are plugged in. So those in-use covers are very, they're very handy.
Absolutely. So we are handling electricity this hour, and we are doing so carefully with safety first. With the first rule of thumb being, if you're not certain, then you should call an expert, and you can find one you can trust by asking around or meeting as many as you need to get the job done. Adam Gullickson is our guest, service manager of the Electrician Inc. in Verona, and you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email, and we'll get to a few of those when we continue. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. Learning a lot about electricity this hour with our guest, Adam Gullickson, Service Manager of the Electrician, Inc. in Verona, and inviting you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the electricity coursing through your house, how you can stay safe, maybe get an upgrade or an improvement, or just some basic maintenance? 1-800-642-1234, or email us, talk@wpr.org, and we'll go to Dennis and Terrivers next. Dennis, hi.
Hi, Lee. Well, first of all, for you, when I heard your pun about being plugged in, it struck a chord with me.
How so? Oh.
I mean, it struck a chord.
Dang it. That's very punny, Dennis.
Okay.
Well played.
Well, anyway, Adam, when you're talking about people possibly doing work on their own, it's very good to take mercy on the people who will take over the property later. My dad was very handy with home improvements and things like that. But when he had dementia, I ended up taking over the property, and I got zapped.
Oh, Dennis, I'm glad you're okay. And I imagine that this is not necessarily uncommon. One of my childhood homes was a do-it-yourselfer, and when we walked in, it was a big question of where is everything and how is it all connected, and how do you make some of those considerations for these homeowners, Adam?
Yeah. And that's why it's a hard line to walk, just because you don't want to encourage everybody to do their own work. But I don't want to tell people that they can't work on their own homes, because It is your home. You can do whatever you want to it. I do have some sympathy though. You know, my father grew up on a farm and he was a DIYer, and when he passed away, I ended up maybe fixing a decent amount of what he had done. And so I do have some sympathy there. And so if you don't know what you're looking at and you get that feeling, just call the pro, just because the next person that buys your home is going to appreciate that.
You ever been zapped like Dennis?
Unfortunately, you won't go through this career without getting zapped. And so it's just something you want to remember, just because a healthy fear of electricity is probably a good thing to have in this job.
So, and it brings up a bigger question. How can you, when it comes to considering reselling your home, what should you take in mind when it comes to the electrical and passing this home along?
Yeah. And, you know, it's a tough standpoint, because, you know, you don't want to, as a seller, you know, I could imagine people don't want to bring somebody in and have their home picked apart.
Right.
But, and you also don't want to sell a home that could possibly, you know, catch fire, you know.
Are there some improvements that you'd recommend that could increase the value of a resale?
Absolutely. I would recommend that 200 amp upgrade like we talked about.
Or three.
Or three. Yep, you are correct. Just because everybody wants an EV charger. That's a hot item right now.
Sure.
And it seems like the amperage that we put on, that we draw from houses, just seems to be increasing. So if you're going to be selling your home and you have 100 amp, I would very much recommend upgrading to 200, just because it's a good resale value. You know, you can add an EV charger at the same time and add that on as well.
And so the bet would be that the money that you invest into this upgrade would be, you'd get more than that out of it when it comes to the sale.
Around that, just because it's not going to get called out on your home inspection, your old 100 amp panel. And so at that point, you know, you don't have the negotiating about who pays for what. It's just already done.
Smart. Sue in Madison emailed to say she wants to upgrade the lighting in her unfinished basement, and she would prefer to have an electrician come over and advise her on what kinds of fixtures would work in the space and maybe purchase those fixtures for her. Can they do that, or should Sue go to Home Depot, pick up the fixtures, and then she can bring in an electrician to install them?
We always tell people there are hundreds of thousands of different fixtures. You can order online, Home Depot, Menards. You can go wherever for fixtures nowadays. I would be, just to match the homeowner's taste, we always tell people, you know, pick your own. If it's a hanging fixture or something like that, or a surface mount fixture, pick your own fixture out so it matches your taste.
So, but would it be something that you could do if they said, we want you to do this with us?
It is something that we could do. It just, I would expect a lot more back and forth. Hey, is this fixture okay? If so, or what would you recommend instead? Things like that. It just, having your own fixture speeds up the process.
Thank you for the email, Sue. We'll go to Bob in Edgerton next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I appreciate you taking my call, and I appreciate this show. I wanted to mention a thing that I did. I had a small outbuilding that had no wiring in it. It was maybe about 800 square feet, and I wanted to wire it myself. And what I did was I did wire it myself. The walls were open, but once I was done, I just put in some outlets and some overhead fixtures. But when I was done, I hired an electrician to come and inspect my work. Mm. And that, it was inexpensive. I think he charged me $150 or $200 to come and look at everything. And that gave me peace of mind, and I still saved money. I thought that worked pretty well. And then I called an inspector to come, you know, then the building guy came, and then I closed up the walls. But
how did you run the power from to the building?
There was a small panel in the building. There was a 30-amp panel in the building, and we upgraded that. But the whole time with no power connected to the building. And then after the electrician looked at the walls and everything, he okayed the work, and he connected the panel.
Okay.
Through the service. I don't think you're even allowed to do that. You have to have an electrician do that.
And that was still just $150.
I think it was $175 for him. I mean, he spent an hour or an hour and a half walking around looking at the work. Yeah.
I think that certainly should be an option, and certainly a safe one as well, Adam.
Absolutely. That is something that we have done before. You know, we've had people that take on a whole basement remodel by themselves, and they'll wire it up and everything. And we've come and inspected it. You know, we just charge them time and material, essentially our hourly rate. And we just come and look everything over, give them an okay, and then they call the inspector just because we've looked it over.
Awesome story, Bob. Thank you. As another option for folks considering upgrading or installing, Caleb in Madison emailed to say he has a 20-year-old house and there are a few paddle switches in Caleb's kitchen that don't seem to do anything. They don't turn on outlets, any lights, any of that, yet they definitely have wires behind the switch and they are certainly going somewhere. So is there any way to diagnose these, or is this one of those call an electrician things?
In this case, you know, I would feel they make things called wire tracers. They work fairly well, but when it comes to, you know, the transition between wall to ceiling, you can lose that wire just because when it goes up into the ceiling, you've got no idea where it ran to, how high up it is. And if it's not sitting right on the surface of the drywall, that wire tracer isn't always going to pick it up. In this, you're welcome to, you know, pick up a wire tracer and investigate yourself. There are some good brands at Home Depot. Klein makes a very good one. If you're willing to do that yourself, go for it. But the electrician is probably going to go be a little more thorough, open up the switches, see where the wiring goes, what it looks like, things like that. And so the electrician, what takes you 4 hours of your own time might take the electrician only 1 hour.
And there is the balance there between time and investment, investment in time versus investment in money. And it depends on where you're at and how much time you have to make that decision. But is it doing any damage there? Not those paddle switches not doing anything? Is there any danger or threat?
No, just because if the wiring goes to somewhere, if there is a cross connection somewhere, the breaker in your panel is always going to do its. If it's a 20-year-old home, it should be fairly relatively new. The breaker is going to trip and do its job.
So I mentioned at the outset of the hour that there are some new safety codes for Wisconsin that are set to take effect September 1st. What should homeowners keep in mind about these, if anything?
That's a very tough one. And just because Wisconsin, so there's National Electric Code, which is NEC.
Okay.
And then there is what's called the SPS, which is a Wisconsin version. They can alternate the NEC to fit the state a little better, you know, just depending on your climate or things like that. Other states have them as well, but Wisconsin's is just the SPS 316, I believe is what they call it. I wouldn't worry too much about it right now, just because the NEC codes are going, yes, they are going into effect September, but we don't know in the state how that's going to play out yet. You know, there could be, from what I read, there's a lot more additional arc fault breakers and new construction builds that are going to be required. But that's kind of the only thing that I can see coming down the pipeline so far.
So this would be more for new construction as opposed to the homes that are already here.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Homes that are already here, they're already wired in a certain way. So I don't want to say they're grandfathered in, especially because I have no affiliation with the code board at all. Mm-hmm. But that's part of what Wisconsin takes into consideration, is we have quite a few old homes as well that you can't just force those people to make new upgrades.
Our guest, Adam Gullickson, service manager of the Electrician Inc. in Verona, taking your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Jonah in Oshkosh next. Hi, Jonah.
Hi, Lee. Thanks for taking over and doing a great job so far.
Thank you.
So previous caller or emailer, Caleb from Madison, I believe it was, mentioned that he's got a couple switches that he knows they go somewhere. They're using electricity. But when he flips them, nothing happens. Well, I don't know if you've seen a pretty popular movie recently called The Backrooms, but he might want to press against his walls and just make sure there's no hidden complex just beyond the veil, so to speak, because they've got some jokes and scenes in that movie just for the electricians in the audience. My brother is studying to be an electrician, and he laughed in the theater at a certain part in the first 20 minutes.
So you're citing a horror film to warn Caleb right now that don't think that those few paddle switches that don't seem to go anywhere are any threat to you, because it could open up an entire new dimension or portal?
Yeah, basically.
Adam, as an electrician, have you seen this new film?
Ooh, I have not quite yet, but if it's got electrical in it, that opens up dimensions, I think I'm going to have to take a look.
I regret not seeing it the way Jonah has described it now. And this goes back to, I believe, Kathy and her dome light that just went out recently that she had a relative installed. So I've got fader lights in my kitchen, and Jonah, thank you for the call and the movie recommendation. So I've got dimmer lights in my kitchen, but the dimmer bar has stopped working. The lights are only on one level. To add to that, I had a roof leak in my kitchen recently, and the water was actually running down the light fixture that no longer is dimming. I feel like there's a lot of things wrong with this story in my kitchen lighting.
Yes, absolutely, Lee. When water becomes present, it's a very good idea to get that inspected, just because water is very damaging. You know, electricians and plumbers, you know, well, the age-old story is that they do butt heads quite a bit. We actually have quite a bit of respect for each other, because electricity is very damaging, but water is also very damaging. And when the two mix together, it's just a recipe for disaster.
How so?
I have a feeling, you know, the dimmer switch, the water running down the wire, water follows, you know, wires and gravity, essentially. Mm-hmm. So if the water leaks in your ceiling, there are wires that go from the ceiling down to the wall. And I'm willing to place money that water probably followed those wires into that dimmer box. And that's why that dimmer no longer works.
So just replacing the switch on the wall probably is not going to restore the dimming capabilities of the light fixture.
Probably not. I'm willing to place money. The light fixture also had water leak onto the back of it as well. I would just recommend replacing both.
Oh, man. I
know.
I guess that's not a surprise, but is there any danger when electricity and water mix?
Absolutely. You know, and that's where we go into GFCI protection.
Okay.
If there's no GFCI protection, you know, there's, and the something happens where a breaker doesn't trip, you know, it can be very, you know, you can send current through that water, essentially, because your breaker won't trip. There's no GFCI protection, things like that. Electricity, you know, those safeguards are a lot of, if this happens, we have this in play.
Mm-hmm.
Or if this happens, we also have this in play just in case this fails. I don't, you know, there are a lot of things that have to go into play to start a fire with electricity. Your breaker needs to not trip, essentially. You also need non-GFCI protection. You need to cross phases at the same time. There's a lot of things that have to go into play. And so it's just that having those safeguards in place is just the best idea.
So there's a lot of fail safes in the electrical system, but mm-hmm. not necessarily fool safe in the electrical system. And I'm feeling a little bit foolish right now. So
that is a good way to put it, Lee. That's great, actually.
Let's go to Pat in Madison next. Hi, Pat.
Hey, hello. I have a question about whole house surge protectors. A few years ago, there was this catastrophic accident with a car hitting a pole and a bunch of wires came down. And like a lot of homes in our neighborhood got fried out, a lot of damage to furnaces and all kinds of major appliances and things. We fortunately weren't on that little wire that came into, you know, came our way. But somebody was talking about these whole house surge protectors that could have, I guess, tripped and saved, you know, the contents or the service going into a home. What do you think about those?
I always think whole home surge protection is a fantastic idea. I personally have one on my home when I upgraded my panel, just because, you know, in Madison, I believe we got quite a few calls about when that vehicle hit that transformer pole and that pole came down. We got a lot of calls of people saying, hey, my furnace doesn't work, my AC quit working, all this other stuff. Those whole home surge protectors, they absolutely, they decrease your chance of those electrical surges making it to your pieces of equipment in your home. What they're supposed to do is take the full brunt of that surge. Yes, while you do have to replace the surge protector, you will not have to replace that piece of equipment.
So when you're losing your furnace, potentially your AC, your hot water heater as a result of a surge that comes from outside your home, when you weigh the balance of costs here, Adam, is a whole home surge protector a better investment than replacing your appliances?
Absolutely it is.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Pat. I hadn't even considered about the electricity outside your home and how it could impact inside your home. But of course, it's a possibility and potentially a wise investment. Another thing I think of when it comes to wise investments with electricity is we've seen some power outages with some severe weather around Wisconsin, and whether or not it's worth installing a backup power generator for your house, Adam. And I'd be, from an electrician's perspective, what do you think about that?
If it more comes down to the fact, if you don't want to live your life uninterrupted during you know, a power outage, then I absolutely would recommend a whole home generator. I unfortunately am one of those people that don't want to live my life uninterrupted by a storm. I still want to be able to continue and, you know, until we get a more severe storm and we have to go into the basement. But I have a whole home generator. And I have had to use it probably 2 or 3 times now. In Madison, you know, I've had it for about 5 or 6 years. But if you're one of those people that is okay just kind of waiting for the power to come back on, there are those people, I would say then you don't need a whole home generator.
I think of those folks with a meat freezer in the garage who have an entire year's worth supply of, and whether or not they're willing to gamble that the power will come back on before that meat begins to thaw.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is Wisconsin. We're a very hunting heavy state. So, you know, I would imagine a lot of people are going to want a generator instead.
What are some of the other considerations to weigh the cost versus the benefit of installing one of these whole home generators? And are there alternatives to them?
You know, there are alternatives. We you know, we're in a day and age where battery backup is a big one as well.
Okay.
It's not as, it can't go for as long of an extended period of time. The generator is a nice option because as long as you have gas flow, like in town in Madison or out, if you're out in the country and have an LP tank, as long as you have gas, you're going to have power.
Sure.
And so that's the nice part to think about it. the cost opportunities, there are different levels. You can have a whole home generator that powers, you know, you can have your dryer running, the AC going, you could cook a Thanksgiving turkey at the same time if you wanted to. But there are, you know, people that just want a couple of freezers. You can size that generator down and, you know, save a little cost on it.
Let's go to Ed Merrill next. Hi, Ed.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am calling on two issues. One is, why would a contractor, electrical, he was actually electrical and carpenter and plumber, why would he put outlets in upside down with the round plug in the top instead of, you know, what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I've seen those outlets before. What's your other question, Ed?
Well, another question is, why I found a laptop that my son and his family had moved, and they had it in their junk, basically junk, and I pulled the laptop out. It was an HP, you know, and we didn't have a power cord for it, so I went and bought one, plugged it in, but it worked, but the box between the power at the outlet and the laptop got a little bit warm, and I was wondering about that. So
yeah, thank you for that. And that box between the cables for a laptop, I believe, is like a heat sink, right? It's supposed to get warm, and it defers the heat away from the electronics inside the laptop. Is that right, Adam?
I can't. This is an equipment versus a an electrical question.
Right.
What I can tell you is I know it goes, you know, the voltage in your house is 120 volts. Your laptop does not charge at 120 volts. It's normally 12 volts. It can be 24 volts, okay, things like that. So what that piece inside, it's a transformer that's taking 120 volts and converting it down to a lower voltage. And in doing that, it does create heat. If it gets so hot that you can't touch it, I would unplug it. But if it's warm, that's fairly normal.
So the electrical outlets that are upside down with the ground on the top and the rest below, I have certainly seen these. Why do they exist?
That is the age you have discovered, the age old question, Ed, of do you put the ground up or the ground down? And electricians, some want the ground up, which is the round part of
Why?
The outlet. There's a theory behind it. If there's a thin piece of metal that were to fall behind a plug, it would hit the ground first instead of the hot and neutral plugs.
Oh, wow. I just thought it was, I don't know what I thought. I've seen them before, and I always thought they were upside down, but that could be right side up when you're considering safety.
If you're considering how often a piece of sheet metal is going to fall perfectly up against a plug.
Okay.
I'm of the ground down side. Some people, just because what are the chances of a piece of sheet metal going perfectly behind a plug to touch the two connections together? It's one in a million, honestly. But there are some people that just, they like the ground up. And so that is an age old argument between electricians.
Great questions, Ed. Thank you so much for calling. I'm just about out of time, but I do recognize that we're hearing stories about AI replacing jobs, and hearing you talk, Adam, I can't believe that AI could ever replace you. So when it comes to starting a career as an electrician, do you have advice for those who might pursue that?
The trades are, I got into them very young. I started at 20. And it was, you know, I had bounced around, went to different colleges, you know, it just wasn't a fit for me. I always encourage the trades because it made me realize that the things you do and the things you do with your hands and build things, mm-hmm, they matter in this world.
Yeah.
You know, the trades, you know, they used to be looked at as, oh, if you don't go to college, you have to join the trades. The trades are a viable career path now that is in such a high demand. We do not have enough plumbers. We do not have enough electricians, HVAC, concrete people, all of it. We've created such a shortage that I always encourage people to join the trades. If you want to take that path as a high schooler, the best thing to do is, it's called a youth apprenticeship. People around Dane County, you can have it where you can, you know, you go to high school, you go to classes in the morning, and you can dip out in the afternoon and go work on a job site to try and get a foothold.
Adam, we'll have to leave it there, but we'll have to invite you back. So thank you so much for a fun hour.
Absolutely, Lee. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Adam Gullickson, service manager of the Electrician Inc. in Verona. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.